called thermodynamics. I'll tell you about the proposal. Really, so I'll deal mainly with asymptotically ADS black holes, so lambda will be negative, and I will associate that with a positive pressure, and I will allow this to be a dynamical variable. And then I'll show you several consequences. So this proposal may seem very weird to you at the beginning, but I think, you know, the consequences are quite nice, so perhaps it will convince you that it's not so crazy thing to do. And then in the second part, to have more fun, I'll show you basically some very familiar phase transitions to you, which are known from everyday thermodynamics. And I'll show you that basically the same type of phase transitions are present in black hole spacetimes in ADS case. Let me also mention some friends who participated in this research, and I will just highlight the students. So it's Natasha Altamirano, Antonia Frassino, Sharmila Gunasekaran, Robbie Henniger, Nathan Musoke, Aruna Rakhagopal, Elham Sherkatkanat, Phil Simovic, and May Till. Okay, so let me start this black holes as thermodynamics objects, and let me start with this famous quote by Sir Arthur Eddington. So let's imagine that you create a new theory, which is your pet theory, you love it very much, and you find out that this theory is in disagreement with Maxwell equations. Well, so much the worse for Maxwell equations. It may be found to actually disagree with the experiment. Well, these experimentalists, they do bungle sometimes. It's not a big disaster. But if your theory is found to be against the second law of thermodynamics, I can give you no hope. There is nothing for it but to collapse in deepest humiliation. So here we go. So let me just demonstrate this on the very simplest example of the Schwarzschild black hole. So here's the metric. It's spherically symmetric spacetime. And so to any spacetime, you can assign some characteristics or some asymptotic charges, some other properties of these black holes. So for example, you can define, because your spacetime is static, then you can define an asymptotic mass. Which describes something like the total energy contained in your spacetime. So the spacetime is static, so there is a timeline killing vector dt. And so by Noether's theorem, you know that to any symmetry, to any global symmetry, there is corresponding conserved charge. And so this is the way how to calculate the corresponding conserved charge. So if this is my killing vector, then the Komar mass is defined as follows. And it describes something like the total energy in the system. You can also calculate other properties of the black hole. So for example, you can calculate how strong the gravity is on the horizon of the black hole. And so this is the formal definition of surface gravity. It comes out to be 1 over 4m, which is exactly the same result as you would get in Newtonian gravity if you calculate the Newtonian acceleration g at the surface of the black hole. So the horizon of the black hole is located at r equal to 2m. So now take the Newton's law, is gm over r square. So take r equal to 2m, and you get 1 over 4m. So that's the Newtonian acceleration, basically, on the surface of the black hole. You can also calculate the area of the black hole horizon, which comes out to be 4 pi r square. And it was shown by Hawking that such a quantity never decreases. So now, look, staring at the quantities which you calculated, you can basically play with them, and it may happen that you calculate the differential of the area and differential of the mass, and you find out this equality here, which was called a law of black hole mechanics. However, this has remarkable similarity with thermodynamics, and the reason being that on the left-hand side, you have something related to the total energy. So, if you can say that the surface gravity is somehow related to the temperature and the area is somehow related to the entropy, then your law of black hole mechanics is nothing else than the first law of thermodynamics. And so this was conjectured by Bekenstein and then taken more seriously after Hawking's famous calculation, where he basically used the QFT in curved space, and so he calculated that indeed the temperature is related to the surface gravity and the entropy is related to the area in the following way. And since then, there have been many other derivations of the same result in the leading order. So you have many other approaches which actually recover this thing. So now you can really promote the law of black hole mechanics to a law of black hole thermodynamics. So more generally, if you now consider more complicated black holes, you include angular momenta, you include some charges and so on, your first law of black hole thermodynamics is written as follows. Now, you can also integrate this relation to get a relation between finite amount of mass and finite amount of entropy and finite amount of charge and so on. And that's called Smargibbs-Duhem relation. So it's basically like an integrated formula of the first law. So I'll be dealing, well, so these two are sort of nicely connected if you do the right thing, and I will explain that later. So however, if you are staring at these relations, you are missing something you learn in high school physics, and so the question is, where is the PdV term, which is the first one you learn about? So you always have TdS, and then you have minus PdV term. However, this term is missing here, and the question is, can you introduce such term into the law of black hole thermodynamics? So the answer is yes and no, and I'll try to convince you that if you do, you get some benefits out of that. Okay, so here we come to the first part. So I'll talk about lambda as a thermodynamic pressure, and the conjugate quantity to lambda, the conjugate quantity to pressure, will be the volume. So here's the proposal, and you may not like it, but it's just a proposal. So let's consider an asymptotically ADS black hole spacetime. So I'll really limit myself to the case of negative lambda. And let's identify the cosmological constant with thermodynamic pressure. So now this is something people have been sort of doing for a long time in cosmology. So they have all, so lambda has really units of pressure. And so in cosmology, people are dealing like with a dynamical pressure. So now I'm saying it's not only dynamical pressure, but it's also thermodynamic pressure. It's a small, subtle thing. So anyway, so this is the prescription which comes from comparing really the diagonal component of the perfect fluid, let's say, with the lambda term. Negative cosmological constant gives you positive pressure. I will sometimes use L instead of lambda. Just this is people use sometimes L. Okay, so we identify lambda with pressure, and so far so good. So now the last step, which you may not like, is the one where you actually say, well, let's consider this as the dynamical quantity. So let's really so lambda will be now a thermodynamic variable on its own right, and let's allow it to vary. Okay, so now it's been shown, and I'm not going to reproduce this calculation, which is quite a long calculation, but it's been shown by Kaster, Ray, and Trashen that if you actually allow lambda to vary, then your first law of black hole thermodynamics actually picks up this extra term, theta delta p, and plus other terms if you want. Okay, so, and this is, sorry? Oh, is it the standard mass? You can calculate. Well, there's an ADS symmetry asymptotically. So you can talk, for example, about Ashtekar's mass. So Ashtekar's mass is well defined in ADS black hole spacetimes. Okay, we can look at that in more detail. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so theta will be something which is a conjugate quantity to pressure. And of course, you know that your conjugate quantity is the volume. So actually, this gives you a way how you can define the volume for your black hole spacetime. So I will just get into that in a minute, but before I do that, you may notice that in high school you learn that delta m is TdS minus PdV, and here I'm writing plus VdP instead of minus PdV. So what it actually means is that I'm not saying anymore that the mass of the black hole is actually energy, but it's a different thermodynamic potential. It's an enthalpy. So enthalpy is an energy to create the system and put it into the environment. So I'm creating a black hole, and I'm putting it in an environment of the cosmological constant. So energy, the internal energy, and the enthalpy are connected by the Legendre transformation, by this relation here. And you can sort of intuitively understand, so the total energy is given by the mass plus the energy density of lambda times the volume of that's times the characteristic volume. And so epsilon is minus p for lambda. So we have recovered this very intuitively relation between the internal energy and the enthalpy. So now I'm saying there's a shift. Mass is not energy, it's an enthalpy. Okay? And that's why you get VdP instead of minus PdV. Now also it gives you really the way how you can define this volume here. And for us, the thermodynamic volume of black holes will be defined simply by taking dm over dp at constant entropy and other quantities. So this is how I define volume. So now this may seem again crazy to you. So now let's have a simplest example, and that's a Schwarzschild ADS. So if you do it for Schwarzschild ADS, you know what the mass is, you know all these quantities here. So you can just calculate dm over dp, and what comes out is 4 thirds pi r plus cube, where r plus is the horizon radius here. So it's this amusing formula, which is it really shows like if the black hole was a ball in Euclidean space of the radius r plus, right? And interestingly, of course, you can take a limit of zero lambda. So this will be valid also for Schwarzschild. So there's absolutely no problem. So when we talk about volume of black holes, there is many other definitions, which I don't want to go into that. So you know, the most naive geometrical volume, I would say, is that you simply integrate square root of g inside a black hole. You know, more involved one is that you use the fact that because if you have a Killing vector, it can always be written that there's always a copotential. So divergence of psi is zero. So I can always introduce omega, which gives me psi. And then you can integrate this omega and it gives you another prescription for the volume. And more recently, there was this vector volume, which is much more complicated definition. But amazingly, in all simple cases, actually all the definitions actually agree on what the volume is. And for Schwarzschild, they precisely give you this thing here. Okay, so you know, there are geometric definitions of volume. There are some very complicated definitions of volume. And there's thermodynamic definition of volume. And they all agree in simple cases. But actually, if you consider, for example, rotating black holes, then they disagree. So there's like an extra term. And so the thermodynamic volume will be, in general, different to the naive geometric one and so on. But in simple cases, they all agree. So now how do you know that actually your definition makes sense? And how do you know that actually the quantity which you define to be a thermodynamic volume is actually a good definition of the volume? And so one of the ways how you can find out is there exists this very nice set of inequalities which are called isoperimetric inequalities, which are sort of an analog. So people doing GR like this. So it's an analog of Penrose inequality. So now let me tell you approximately what this inequality means. So just consider any domain in Euclidean space. So this domain has some volume and it has some surface area. Okay. So now you can calculate ratio where so d is the number of dimensions. So let's say in three dimensions d would be three. So let's take the volume of the domain. And let's take the area of the domain. And so this omega is just a normalization. It's basically like a volume of the d-dimensional sphere. So you just normalize everything here and normalize everything here. So let's calculate this ratio. And then it's a mathematical theorem that in Euclidean space, any domain, this ratio will always be smaller or equal than 1. And it's equal to 1 if and only if your domain is actually round sphere. So if it is anything else, the ratio will be smaller than 1 if you calculate it here. So now, for black holes in ADS case, for some reason which is not entirely clear to me, it seems to be the case that actually this guy is always bigger or equal than 1. So it's exactly opposite to what you get in Euclidean space. And it's, well, Kerry Gibbons has some theory that is due to the fact that how negative lambda actually behaves. So due to the fact that you are not in Euclidean space, but you have negative cosmological constant, this actually reverses its sign. So now this has been conjectured in this paper, and then many examples. So you can test this conjecture on various black holes. So what we did is we took wide variety of black hole spacetimes. We calculated volume, calculated ratio. Sometimes you have to do it numerically, so it's really annoying work. But anyway, so for all the cases, we actually found that this inequality is actually satisfied. And this inequality becomes equality if and only if you have basically spherically symmetric spacetime. So if you are in Schwarzschild ADS charge doesn't do anything, so Riesen and Ostrom ADS will also work. But because you know that the area of the black hole is related to the entropy of the black hole, then you can say, okay, so for a given thermodynamic volume V, the entropy of the black hole is maximized for spherically symmetric spacetime. Okay, so this is a conjecture. So far, it worked until very recently. So we looked at these very weird black holes, and it's with Robby, Robman, and Nathan, who is here. And so this is the first paper, and then it is this bigger paper in preparation. So as I said, we tested on several black holes. But there is this very, very, very weird black hole, which was published by Clem in 1401. And so the black hole is really crazy. It has non-compact horizon. So what it does, it looks almost spherical if you are close to the black hole. But if you go to the axis, actually, it goes and it extends all the way to infinity. The horizon extends all the way to infinity. So the topology of this horizon is like a sphere with two punctures. And these two punctures are at infinity. So what is remarkable about this black hole is that, it has non-compact horizon and it extends, but it has actually finite horizon area. So it's actually the shape of this thing is such that you actually get a finite area. So then, if
so you're saying that at a given time, the horizon goes all the way to infinity?
Yes.
Then why would you call it a black hole then?
Well, it's a black hole, right? You mean over here?
Yeah, whatever. So I have a ray, say, if I imagine what would be the island of Kruskal diagram, so I've got something that just meets scribe for infinity at some given finite time for an observer. And so why would that observer say something nasty might happen there if they cross it a little bit?
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that you can reach the observer from the inside of the code, does it?
Horizon, so that means that
a null
ray could get there. Maybe
it's just a single ray that can get out.
The null ray of horizon would meet, if it were a black hole, would meet an observer at infinity and a finite half and time. No, it's meeting a finite half and time. So I don't think you would call that a horizon. Black hole or. Just technically.
Okay.
Well, it's also a predictivity problem.
No,
is that critical to the discussion? Is this a family of solutions that become increasingly, move increasingly far, or is this a family of solutions that always touches?
No, it's not a family of solutions. It's really one solution, which, and the horizon extends all the way to infinity. It's like so if you zoom on this, it looks like a trumpet, basically. So it goes all the way to infinity, and, it's like a puncture.
So essentially, you have a marginally trapped surface that you can call horizon if you squint.
Okay. So what is important for us? So this is the solution given by Clem to us. So what we calculated is the volume, thermodynamic volume, and what we calculated is the area. And then actually, if you compare these two and calculate the ratio, actually this black hole violates this isoperimetric inequality. So it's like a first counter example. To this inequality, but of course at the expense that you have very weird black hole, right? So if it's a black hole, good. So we can define a thermodynamic volume. We change the notion of the mass. Now it's an enthalpy. So now a practical argument why you would consider to vary lambda is the following. So I told you that you have the first law, and then you have the smile relation. And so these are usually connected by very fundamental scaling argument. So what it means. So let's start with the Euler's theorem. So let's say that you have a function which satisfies this type of equality. Then you can integrate it, or then the following equation is true. So now if you apply this to black hole spacetimes, then the mass of the black hole is a function of the area and the pressure in general. So now lambda, the pressure, goes like 1 over length square. The area goes like L square, and the mass goes like length in the unit square, where g is equal to 1. So now, if I apply this theorem, then it says, well, m goes like L, so it's 1 times m, and then 2 times a, dm over d lambda, and then minus 2 coming from here times p, dm over d lambda. Okay, so now this is just mass. So now you need to use the first law of thermodynamics, where actually I vary this dp here. So it tells me that dm over d lambda is related to v, and dm over dA is related to kappa here. And so if you plug it here and then write it in more familiar quantities, you get the following smile relation, which will be valid for Schwarzschild black hole. So if you don't have that term, in other words, if you didn't consider this term in the first law, then this term wouldn't be here, and the smile relation wouldn't be true. So to get a consistent smile relation in ADS black hole spacetimes, you really need to do this. Otherwise, the smile relation, the correct one, which is this one, will not be associated with the first law in any reasonable way, in this very fundamental scaling argument, which is really, really something fundamental. So more generally, so this is your thing. So now you have to add the BDP term, and then you have to add to the smile relation this term here. And that is a paper by Custer and Ray and Trushin again. So it's a different paper, where they say, well, actually, I'll have to add more and more terms if I introduce to my theory dimension full parameters. So for example, if you have, Lovelock theories, where you have dimension full constants, then you need to introduce other parameters here, which would correspond to these constants. So this is like very practical reason why to vary lambda to get the smile relation. Okay, so that's the first part, questions. So now let's have some fun with space transitions. Here is roughly what I'll be doing. So I'll study charged and rotating ADS black holes, and then I'll study them in specific ensemble, which is called canonical ensemble, and it's either fixed Q for charged black hole or fixed angular momentum for rotating black holes. And then I'll do something very naive, but I'll basically say, well, let's consider let's compare whatever I get for thermodynamics of these black holes to thermodynamics of normal fluids. So I'll associate the temperature of the black hole with the temperature of the fluid, the volume of the black hole with the volume of the fluid, and so on. So now I'll also study the corresponding thermodynamic potential, which is the Gibbs free energy. So it's the enthalpy minus T times S. And I will use the fact that equilibrium state always corresponds to the global minimum of this Gibbs free energy. Okay, so that will be something I'll be using. You can also be interested in local equilibrium or local stability, and so you usually require that the specific heat is actually positive, and so on. You can study phase diagrams, let's say PT diagrams, and you'll see that there are some critical points. You can calculate critical exponents, and so on. So this is what I'll be doing now. So let me start with the simplest possible example, and that's Schwarzschild ADS black hole. And so is this famous paper by Hawking and Page from 83. And so what they did study is Schwarzschild ADS. So I allow this K. So you would have K equal to 0 if you have planar black hole, K plus 1 if you have normal spherical black hole as you know it, and K minus 1 if you have hyperbolic black hole. So let's first do the simplest one, K plus 1, the standard Schwarzschild ADS black hole. So now what you can do is you can actually plot the Gibbs free energy for a fixed pressure, how it depends on the temperature T. And so what you get is this line here, science students know from the tutorial, is that so the radius of the black hole actually increases like that. So you have small black holes here, and the radius increases, and then it suffers this kink here, and it goes down, and so you have large black holes over here. So now, if you want to globally minimize your Gibbs free energy, that means that you don't want to be on this branch of the black hole, because there's always a corresponding bigger black hole, which has smaller Gibbs free energy. So I'm saying that these black holes will be preferred. So the big black holes will be preferred to small black holes. And this is you know, confirmed by, for example, local thermodynamic stability. So if you calculate C, the specific heat for these, it's actually negative. For these, it's positive. So they are really preferred, more stable black holes. Okay, so these are two branches of black holes. So now you can consider like the full system. And the full system, you know that the black holes, the black hole actually evaporates. So there's some radiation coming from the black hole. So in your system, there's also radiation. And you can always choose units, or there's not so much radiation, that actually the radiation has zero Gibbs. So this would be like the Gibbs free energy of the radiation. So now the global system consists of radiation plus black hole. So you won't always want to minimize the whole thing. And so the minimum of the Gibbs is actually here, until it becomes here. So there must be a phase transition from a radiation phase to a black hole phase. So at this temperature, T. Hawking page, there will be a first order phase transition, first order because the Gibbs is continuous, but its derivative is not. And so there's a radiation black hole phase transition. So now you can plot this for different P. So this was all fixed P. So now if you change P, this will happen at different temperature. So you can now produce a graph where you change P and you change where this T. Hawking page actually occurs. And this is what you get. So you get a PT diagram where there's an infinite coexistence line of two phases of the radiation and large black hole. And this is precisely for any P, you get a Hawking page transition. Okay. So by the way, this was interpreted by Witten as a QCD phase transition, so from quark, gluon, confinement phase transition. But in the fluid interpretation, we sort of have like solid liquid type of phase transition. Okay, so now you can also study an equation of state of these things. So how do I get an equation of state? The standard fluid equation of state. So this is the equation for the temperature as you would calculate it. Just F prime over 4 pi. And now I say L is pressure, and R plus is related to the volume. This 4 thirds pi R cube is the volume. So now if you rewrite this equation in terms of the new quantities, you get an equation PV equals to T, and then there's K. I return back the K, which describes your topology of the black hole, and plus something here. So now you see that if you have K equals 0, if you have planar black hole, you recover the ideal gas law for Schwarzschild-Lady's black hole. So now what is this V? I cheated here a little bit, but not so much. I said, well, it's a thermodynamic volume. It's actually not. It's some power of the thermodynamic volume. It's basically like R plus. But this has some justification, because this equation is valid if V is like a specific volume. So now how do you get specific volume is that you take the volume and divide it by a number of degrees of freedom. So now the only number which you have here is the horizon area and Planck units, right? So I can sort of cheat here and say, okay, so this N is A over L Planck, and then this gives me V. Anyway, so you see that for Schwarzschild ADS black holes, you have an equation of state which is the ideal gas law. Okay. So now can we go beyond the ideal gas law? Can we get something more interesting? And yes, you can. And so this was a famous paper by Chamblain, Emperan, Johnson, Clifford Johnson, and Rob Myers. And then at the same time by Miriam Cvetic. And then we sort of took the same thing, but we interpreted it in a slightly different way. So let me just remind you what a van der Waals fluid is. So van der Waals fluid is a van der Waals equation. It's a two-parametric equation for your fluid. It has parameter A and parameter B. So parameter A measures the attraction between the particles. and it's always positive, and the parameter B corresponds to the volume of fluid particles. So basically, you change your ideal gas law by subtracting the volume of the fluid particles, and then the pressure actually increases because of this term here. And so now if you plot isotherms of this thing, so you have B and P diagrams, then you get ideal gas law for big temperatures, but at T equal to T critical, you develop an inflection point, which will correspond to a critical point, and below T critical, there is actually a phase transition. And the phase transition is according to, so it occurs at a pressure which can be calculated from the Maxwell equilibrium level. So this area is actually equal to that area here, and that gives you for which pressure the phase transition actually occurs. Okay, so now you can calculate the critical point, and you can calculate, and it will be in terms of parameters A and B, and then you can calculate PCVC over TC, and it gives you 3/8. So maybe that's your chance to find something new. So now, this was the Van der Waals fluid. If you take Riesen-Nordström ADS black hole, so just the charged black hole, this is the equation of state which you get. So this is the charge, and then the pressure, and temperature, and the volume. So if I had Q equal to 0, I would just return back to Schwarzschild ADS. So now this equation is not exactly Van der Waals equation, but actually mimics it very qualitatively very well. So for example, if you draw the PV diagram, so for charged ADS black hole, it looks like this. For Van der Waals fluid, it looks like that. So you see that it's very similar. If you so there is, again, a critical point. If you calculate BCVC over TC, it gives you 3/8 in both cases. So it's actually interesting. It's probably a coincidence, but anyway. So now we can study the Gibbs free energy, and the Gibbs free energy has this characteristic swallow tail. So Gibbs is a function of temperature and pressure, and so this is for Van der Waals, and this is for the black hole. And you see that there's this phase at a point where the Gibbs actually sort of crosses each other in this swallow tail, that there's a phase transition. Yeah.
So when you take this analogy with Van der Waals gas, you have this volume of the atoms, or A, parameter A. So what is the analogy of that in the case of the black hole?
So for us, the volume is just related to the size of the black hole. So I so it's basically this. So in the Van der Waals fluid case, the order parameter is the density of the fluid. So suddenly, if you change from gas to liquid, the density actually suffers from a jump, right? So during the phase transition. So here, the order parameter is basically the size of the horizon. So during the phase transition, what happens is that you have a let's say a big black hole or a small black hole, and then radiation. And at some point, the black hole doesn't want to be small anymore, and so all the radiation sort of collapses and creates a big black hole. So so the order parameter would be the size of the black hole or the volume of the black hole, if you want. Yeah. So that's okay. So you can draw a PV diagram, and you see that there's a critical point, liquid gas phase transition, small black hole, large black hole phase transition. Now you can verify that all the nice equations are satisfied. So N first equation describing the vicinity of the critical point. People constructed the Clausius-Clapeyron equation describing the slope of this coexistence line between the two phases. You can also calculate the critical exponents of the critical point, and you find that they are just the standard mu field theory critical exponents, and so they basically just describe the basic properties of physical variables close to this critical point. Okay, so now since this paper, many people jumped at this and then tried to calculate, studied various black holes, and they discovered that very many black holes actually demonstrate this Van der Waals type behavior. They always get a first order phase transition. It terminates at a critical point. And all these critical points actually have the mean field theory critical exponents. And so they all look like the Van der Waals fluid, if you want. So in the end, I'll show you that we have one example where this is not the case. But it's a very weird example. Okay. So now, I told you that this is only very briefly. So I told you that the equation of state is only qualitatively the same, this Van der Waals equation, it's not quantitatively the same. So now we try to look at, well, within this ansatz, the simplest possible ansatz you can imagine, can you really find out the black hole which would exactly describe the Van der Waals equation of state? So what you have to do is that, well, you say that the temperature is related to the metric function F by this thing here, and you demand that this is exactly Van der Waals equation. You also demand that the volume is calculated dm over dp, and in the same way as we did it for, it's like a specific volume V is V over N, where N is A over L Planck. And so this gives you some differential equation, and if you solve that equation, this is your horrible answer. So this is a black hole. It has a horizon. It's a black hole. It's a spherical symmetric black hole, which actually would reproduce Van der Waals equation exactly. But you see it's horrible. And so you see also that there is a term. So you have, if A is 1 over 2 pi, then it's 1 minus 2m over R. So that's fine. Now this is the ADS part. It's also fine. But then you have a term linear in R here. So that's a bad part. And of course, you have also some logarithmic term here. It's not a vacuum solution. It's a solution which has some matter in it. And unfortunately, this matter is not reasonable matter. So this matter actually violates some energy conditions and so on. Yes?
Why do you want it to be the Van der Waals
equation? Oh, it's just for fun. So of course, I'm not saying that Van der Waals equation is something really fundamental. It's not, right? It's, you know, it's just nice, closed form two parameter.
But for real gases, there's a reason there's a Van der Waals equation. I'm just wondering why.
Yeah. So, if you just take Reisner-Nostrum ADS, it is so close that we thought, okay, so if you perturb it a little bit, then you must get Van der Waals, you know, but you don't. This is the answer. So this is really a horrible answer, right? Yes.
Why do you have no experimental?
What is this guy? Oh, I have no idea. It's really some so this, you know, it doesn't make any physical sense, because I'm saying so. You need to provide some stress energy momentum tensor there, and it will violate energy conditions. So it's some very weird matter. The fall of this matter at infinity is very bad because of this linear in R term. So it's, you know, it's very weird. So
you must have some reason for thinking you could know what's inside a black hole.
No, for the other ones, he's just checking what's going on outside the black hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You change the solution, it's structure like yes. Think you claim to completely certification.
With the equations taken, it's not exactly the one we're looking for.
No.
But this is the error.
Anyway, so if you don't like this, I don't like it either, so don't worry about it. So now there's something very interesting, and so if you don't take anything from my talk, I would like you to carry this thing, and that's about re-entron phase transition. So I didn't know what re-entron phase transition is actually until 2 years ago, and so it's a phenomenon which is quite often observed in thermodynamics of like multiple, substances together. So now what it is. So a system undergoes a re-entron phase transition if a monotonic variation of any thermodynamic quantity results in one or more phase transitions, such that the final state is macroscopically similar to the initial state. Okay, so that's the definition. So let's just have an example. And it was actually the first example when this transition was observed in 1904. And so it was actually a nicotine water mixture. And so here is the graph. So here you have the percentage of how much nicotine in your mixture is from 0 to 100%. And here's the temperature of the mixture. So now you have this big bubble here. So if you are outside of the bubble, then you cannot really distinguish nicotine from water. So they are in mixed state, they are homogeneous thing, and you cannot really separate the two. However, if you are inside, so let's say I decrease the percentage or I increase the temperature here, and suddenly two layers form. And so you have a layer of nicotine and layer of water. So this is in this case. However, it depends on where in the bubble you are. So there's this line of another transition where actually the layers swap sides. So in this upper bubble, you have nicotine above water. And then you have nicotine layer and water layer. And then if you decrease the temperature, they swap. And then if you even decrease, they mix together. Okay, so now why this is a RPT is because I start from a mixed state. I cannot really distinguish the two phases. I keep increasing temperature, you know, some weird things happening. But in the end, if I am above 220 degrees, then actually I have again mixed state, and it's macroscopically, you know, similar to the state which I started here. Or I can go this way, it doesn't matter. So this is something which is actually quite often observed in the case where you have like multi-component fluid systems and you know, liquid crystals and so on. And so I, if you are interested in this behavior, so this is to review, to read.
Do you have any idea why they were using nicotine? Something about the cigarette and what?
I think everybody can do it at home, right? I don't know. Okay, so now I sort of try to convince you that you can observe similar behavior in black hole spacetimes, but at the expense that you consider unphysical black holes. So you go to higher dimensions, so you go to 6 dimensions. And you consider rotating black holes. So it's like a black hole, but now in 6 dimensions. And so the corresponding Gibbs free energy is this one here. So the arrows show you how the radius of the black hole actually increases. So there are small black holes here and large black holes here. And this is all for fixed angular momentum. So these small black holes, because they have the same J as these large black holes, so these are spinning like crazy. And these are relatively slowly spinning. So now, of course, if you start with, let's say, big temperature, so you want to be a big black hole here, so you're on this line here, and so until this point, where actually it's not, you know, it's not good to continue on that thing, but it's better to actually become a smaller black hole, so you undergo a first order phase transition here, and so you keep going all the way up to here, but you cannot go any longer, so you have to jump to be back on that line here. So basically, you are big black hole, small black hole, and big black hole again. Whereas this is a first order phase transition because Gibbs is continuous, but derivative is not. So here you suffer from jump of Gibbs. And so it's zero order phase transition, which is something very weird, but it's been observed in superfluidity, actually. So you can have these phase transitions. So if I draw again the PT diagram, it's now more complicated, but let's say I fix P so that I don't have to vary P. So now I want to be at this range of the temperature. So there is no black hole in this temperature. So it's just, let's say, radiation here. And then you form an intermediate black hole or small black hole. Then you undergo a phase transition to even smaller black hole. And then you undergo first order phase transition to a large black hole. So comparing to water nicotine, so at low temperature, I have mixed state intermediate black hole, and then water nicotine, so you have small black hole, and at high temperature, you have large black hole here. So it's really like you start with the same type of small black hole if you want, with the same type of large black hole if you want, and then in the meantime, you have small black hole here. So now what's happening, and so this will be of interest mainly to Lewis, is that, of course, he will tell me, oh, well, these ultra-spinning black holes, they are unstable, and then he's right. So what's actually happening is that the black hole has, in higher dimensions, in 6 dimensions, has actually two limits. So in the first limit, if it's rotating very, very slowly, it looks like a black hole, like a spherical black hole. But if it's actually rotating quite fast, it sort of pancakes and forms a black brain. So it's like a pizza-like thing, and so the properties of this thing here are completely different to properties of this thing here, and this is why you can get this reentrance. So you get RPT phase transition always when you actually when it's like two phenomena at least competing with each other. So you have one type of behavior competing with another type of behavior. Which behavior is winning? That type of phase you have at that point. So if I return back to the Gibbs here, so these small black holes are sort of like membrane-like. So these are really ultra-spinning black holes, and these are slowly spinning black holes. So these black holes have completely different behavior than these black holes here, and so it's exactly the competition between whether you have membrane-like thing or whether you have spherical black hole-like thing, which actually wins. So it's like you have like two component behavior here. Okay. So now just to amuse you, If you add one more rotation, we are still in six dimensions, but now you have two rotations, you can produce something like solid liquid gas. So you have small black hole, intermediate black hole, and large black hole, and you have a critical point, you have a triple point here. And so contrary to solid liquid, where the coexistence line goes all the way to infinity, there is another critical point here. Okay, but you can get a triple point if you want, and that's these two rotation parameters. So perhaps more interesting is actually this thing here. So I told you that all the black holes, all the critical points had this mean field theory critical exponents. So now people were really trying to get something else. And so one case where you can get something very weird and non-trivial is that if you go to higher curvature corrections. So now you know Gauss-Bonnet gravity, which is like I'm adding to your Einstein-Hilbert action an additional higher curvature term. So now, more generally, you can go to low-level gravities where you add these Euler densities here. And so it's like higher and higher curvature corrections. And these are the coupling constants, which actually describe expansion. So now, this becomes non-trivial only in sufficient high dimension. So you have to go to 7 dimensions, 9 dimensions, and so on. OK, so now, If you special tune these couplings here, so you have to really choose special values for these couplings. If you consider odd order k, so this expansion is, this k is actually of odd order, and if you consider hyperbolic black holes, which is again something very weird, then instead of swallowtail, you get two swallowtails. You get one swallowtail here, and you get another swallowtail here, and they meet at the same point. Okay, so this will be your critical point. Here, if you go to the left, there's a first order phase transition here. If you go to the right, there's another first order phase transition here. But at that critical point, actually, the phase transition is second order. Okay, and so it's because the two swallowtails actually meet here together. So now, because you have second order phase transition at critical point, you can calculate the critical exponents. And if you do that, this is what you find. If you compare it to mean field theory critical exponents, you see that the alpha agrees, but theta is different. And then gamma depends on which order global gravity you consider. And then delta is given by k here. So now what is interesting about these critical exponents is that they satisfy these inequalities. So there's like two basic equalities. They are usually equalities. But in our case, actually, they are. You know that traditionally only two critical exponents are actually independent. All the others are given by these scaling relations. So one of them is this one here. And usually another one is that when this is equal to 2. However, more generally, I think, based on very general considerations, you can show that this is actually bigger or equal than 2, just thermodynamic considerations. It doesn't have to be equal. So now these critical exponents actually satisfy both of these relations, but they are actually the left-hand side here is bigger than 2. Okay, so something strange is going on in this relation. Also, you can calculate this. I don't know how to pronounce that. Pigogin-Defy ratio, which is ratio of the compressibility and the specific heat. And for a normal critical point, the mean field theory critical point, this comes out to be 1. So now if you are in these log things, it comes out to be 1 over k. And you know, people usually take this as an indication that actually something weird is going on. And then perhaps more than one order parameter is actually involved in this phase transition. So the moral of the story here is that, yes, you can go beyond mean field theory critical exponents if you add these higher curvature corrections. This is the result you actually get. Okay, so conclusions. So starting with the quote of Eddington, I try to convince you that thermodynamics is a governing principle, and black holes are not an exception. So I would like just to draw your attention to the fact that recently people have been playing with the idea of identifying lambda as the dynamical pressure. And so if you do that, you get some benefits out of that. So first of all, you can you can define what a volume of the black hole is. You also get this isoperimetric inequality, which is violated by this very weird black hole, but for all normal black holes, actually, it works. And, you know, of course, this has been checked. It's a conjecture only. So it has been checked on a variety of normal black holes, but there's no general proof. But, you know, if it is true, then it gives you some kind of inequality, which is something like Penrose inequality. So it can, you know, limit some processes in dynamical space-time, so whatever. So any inequality in GR is good. So if this is true, then it's a good inequality. So what you also get is that you get consistency with the Smile relation. Because you have volume, you can also define the compressibility of the black hole space-time, so how the volume changes if you change pressure or whatever. And so actually, this was investigated by Brian Dolan. And so if you study these high-dimensional black holes, they are known to be unstable in these ultra-spinning regimes. And so Brian was able to show that actually you can sort of see this instability by studying the compressibility. So he showed that actually if you have very soft equation of state, if you change the pressure only a little bit and, you know, the volume changes like crazy, then actually it's precisely in the regime where the black holes are unstable. So this gives you like very, very simple thermodynamic check of when the instability might occur. Okay. So I also, to have some fun, I showed you that you can have some analogs of everyday thermodynamics. So you can have like solid liquid gas in the Schwarzschild case. You can have something like van der Waals. You can have even reentrant phase transitions, triple points, and so on. And interestingly, you can get this very special, weird, isolated critical point, which has actually different critical exponents here. So now, whole my talk, I was talking about ADS case, but you can sort of play the same game in DS space, in desiderate black holes. Space-times, but of course everything is more complicated because you don't have one temperature in that space-time. You have like cosmological horizon, which is at one temperature. You have the black hole horizon, which has a different temperature. You also don't have time-like asymptotic Killing vector dt. It becomes space-like outside of that, so it's, you know, difficult to define what you mean by mass and so on. So there are many, you know, problems in the space-times, But regarding the volume, yes, you can define, for example, the volume of the observable universe. So what is the volume between the cosmological horizon and the black hole horizon? And it actually satisfies, again, phenomenologically, something like isoperimetric inequality. So again, you have something nice there. And of course, this is the whole chapter, which I'm not going to discuss here today, is there any interpretation of all of this in ADS-CFT correspondence? And you know, just give you two references which try to actually address these questions here. Okay, so thank you very much.
You showed interesting properties, like thermodynamic properties, which holds for black holes, right? It's kind of black holes.
Okay.
Does it say something about like, you know, black hole problems, like, for example, information loss, or?
We haven't thought about it at all, so I don't know if it has anything to say about these things. I don't know. We can discuss.
Yeah, let me just try to push or go deeper into point one that you have there. So, I mean, in what sense are you saying that this is thermodynamics governing principle? I mean, you showed that there are a lot of everyday thermodynamics that you can reproduce with the black holes. But on the black hole side, you play the game of you're going to bend every single possible option out there, i.e. dimensions, symmetries, are in charge, whatever, to match one particular behavior.
Yeah.
But, I mean, is this surprising? I mean, if you give me enough freedom in systems, I could always match whatever I want to match. So what governing principle can I draw from here?
Okay, so I wasn't referring to these concrete examples. You're right. So if I you know, going to higher and higher dimensions, adding more and more parameters, it's likely that you are getting various phase transitions and you know more interesting phase behavior. I agree with that. Yeah, and it's not in that sense it's not surprising. It's not surprising. But you know, going for Reisner and Ostrom ADS, which is very, very simple black hole, and you get something like van der Waals, I think it's at least interesting, right? So.
Or a fluke.
Huh?
Or a fluke.
Yeah.
I mean, so the but if you can answer that question, I mean, is it a fluke or is it something you knew would happen?
I think you have to discuss.
That's an important question.
I think you have to discuss with these people. So if they can do it, I can do it too.
Related to this question, physics is ultimately based on experimental physics. How will I ever know what's inside a black hole from outside? Because it's black.
Right. I'm not saying anything about inside the black hole. I'm doing everything outside of the horizon.
Okay, you have
I'm assigning a volume to the black hole space-time, which you can sort of understand as a volume of the black hole inside of the black hole, but it's but, yeah. But
every model that one can dream of probably becomes Schwarzschild outside as R increases. So it's a very non-unique situation. So many different possibilities. Some people have published papers where the inside of the black hole is just a citadel, so there's no singularity. So
yeah.
There's everything between that and whatever else.
I think Antonia studied something which you actually have a regular black hole, so you provide some kind of weird matter inside the black hole. And I don't know what the volume comes out to be, or does it have any influence on what the volume is, or?
At the moment, I would say that has no influence if you want to perform the calculation of the phase transitions given to the final body, the dynamic body.
Okay.
To calculate the free energy, you use free energy, you can use the mass of the black hole and temperature and entropy, and basically from the entropy.
So the answer is we don't know.
In David's case, it's only just looking at the exterior of the black hole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then using properties of that.
Yeah, but the inside is the phase transitions.
No, I don't think so.
Is this identifying
different class of solutions you have, you fix the microscopic parameters. If you have more than one solution, then it's going to say we have these tools.
It's just the thermodynamics argument that is.
Yeah.
I know the rules of thermodynamics regardless of what the microphysics describing the inside is.
But,
and we don't. There's no. Nobody knows what that is.
Yeah, and stay in the
classical. These are vacuum solutions of Einstein's
free
equation. Yeah. Exact solutions.
Yep.
Some of them.
With respect to this that you call the van der Waals black hole, I'm just curious, what do you obtain when you take the ideal gas limit once you have the solution for the metric function?
Oh, for that one. It's a good question.
When
B goes to zero and A goes to zero, so all these problematic terms actually go to zero, and precisely. So I told you that it happens for the planar case, so where actually this thing actually was called K, but it was equal to zero. So this is gone, and you have just this term and that term. Yeah, so you recover ideal gas from there if you set A and B equal to zero. Yes, you do. But this is I shouldn't have put it here because it's very, very weird black hole, and it's not really physical. So. But anyway, it was just really to demonstrate that you can do whatever you want. So if you don't like van der Waals equation, then you like any other equation, by the same procedure, you just put a different thing on the right-hand side, right? And so if you think that is a more fundamental equation, you can do it in the same way.
Since you have a black hole and lambda is a free parameter, in how far does the space-time matter? Is it just giving kind of a boundary condition, or? You assume lambda is constant everywhere. How does that work?
So here I'm indeed treating lambda as a uniform thing.
So lambda is one parameter that can vary. So
yeah.
Why then do you restrict yourself to ADS and DS? Why can't lambda be zero? I mean, zero pressure, you could do that.
You can do that, yes, yes. But for example, yes, you can do it. So all of these things have usually nice and smooth limits. If you start with negative lambda, and then you send lambda to zero, you can it's nice and smooth limit, no problem. If you go from DS, of course, you know there's a jump. So we suddenly create a cosmological horizon from infinity, right? And the behavior is completely different. So going from DS to vacuum, it's more complicated. But from ADS to vacuum, there's no problem. You can do it with speed. But for example, to really define the volume, the thermodynamic volume as I did here, So I told you, okay, this is valid for Schwarzschild ADS, and I can do a limit to Schwarzschild as well. But in order to calculate what V is, I need to do dm over dp. So I really need to know the Schwarzschild ADS solution. I need to know the mass of Schwarzschild ADS. And then I can do the limit. So you know, at this point, this is the only definition of this volume here. So you really need to know the ADS solution, and then you can go to that case limit.
Okay. No further question. David is a local, so you can almost grab him. Let things take David.
Thank you.